In celebration of the 20th anniversary of the Morro Bay National Estuary Program, we decided to visit with some of the people whose lives are intertwined with the bay and the estuary. Come along and join Karen Worcester and Dave Paradis as they recall the early days of the Morro Bay National Estuary Program and the beauty of our watershed.
My name is Karen Worcester, and about 25 years ago, I was working for Fish and Game as the freshwater biologist in this area. I was worried about this watershed because of the water supply, because of sedimentation, and I started talking to some great locals who shared my concerns. And that actually caused me to change jobs entirely and take a job with Regional Water Quality Control Board specifically to work on the Morro Bay watershed and to get a monitoring program started for it. In the course of doing that, I ran across this character. Would you like to introduce yourself?
I'm Dave Paradis. I moved to this area back in 1980, and this bay drew me to this place. Morro Bay is the first of the National Estuary Programs that was actually started up with a local community nonprofit. Virtually all the other estuary programs that had come before in the nation were started up and run by government agencies. In this case, we had a local foundation, the Bay Foundation, and a very, very close relationship with the Regional Water Quality Control Board. So it was truly one of those public sector, private sector types of partnerships.
Efforts of a number of entities, including the Coastal Conservancy and others, we were able to pull the funds together to acquire that land and start a planning process to remove the levee and restore its natural floodplain function. The intent being that it would be important to capture the sediment before it got into the bay. Well, we had an enormous fire in the watershed in 1994, a tremendous rainy season the following year. And of course, that meant all this sediment that was made available up in the mountains was going to wash down into the bay. So pretty much in an emergency situation, we breached the levee. And sure enough, we had this enormous flooding event that filled that entire piece of land with many feet of newly deposited sediment. It was really spectacular to watch what happened next when the willow seeds came down in that sediment and just exploded, and suddenly we had a riparian forest there.
When I initially got involved, it ultimately led to our planning to move beyond the Chorro Flats project, identify places in both this watershed in Chorro Valley and in the Los Osos Valley where there would be key parcels of land where we could work with the landowners, some parcels of land where it actually were planned for fairly intense development. And we purchased rights from those landowners, from willing landowners, and in some instances actually purchased the land, turned it into a wildlife refuge, in effect. Several examples of that. Hollister Peak over there, the entire lower section of that mountain we acquired. It was targeted for hundreds of condominiums and golf courses. We didn't think that that would be very good for the bay, and luckily, the owner of the land ultimately agreed with us, so we were able to acquire the mile and a half of Chorro Creek and the surrounding hills.
Of course, sediment movement into an estuary is a natural process. The concern is really not that sediment move into the bay, it's the rate that it was moving, and that we saw this acceleration. With major 100-year flood events, we definitely are going to see big pulses of sediment move in and change a system. We felt that there was a lot we could do to slow sediment and improve the quality of the streams themselves, because the streams support steelhead trout, a threatened species, and other things that are damaged by the sediment as well. We started really working with a lot of the ranchers in the valley. We put in a lot of fencing, did a lot of, as Dave mentioned, floodplain acquisition and restoration. There have been a lot of additional water quality improvements that have come along the way. For example, when you fence cattle out of creeks, you see drops in the coliform levels in the creeks. So all of the projects that are being done in the watershed are beneficial to those outcomes in the bay. Dave was the original program director of the National Estuary Program, and I was the first scientific director. One of the issues we were really interested in was what was happening in the bay in terms of hydrology and flushing of the sediment out of the bay. And there's a hydrologic pinch point in the bay where the flows increase and there's a lot of depth right there. So we decided it would be important to characterize the flows in that particular location. So we spent an entire night out in a dinghy with a flow meter
We wanted to measure an entire tidal cycle by the minute. So we were sitting in a small, ragged little boat that I had with some borrowed equipment to measure the flows in salt water there. The watershed's impact on the bay is often dominated by the extremes, you know. In high flows, it moves sediment. When the flows are too low, the steelhead have nowhere to live. One of my first introductions to freshwater work was when Karen needed an assistant to measure flows in Chora Creek because we were worried about people taking so much water out of the creek, both for irrigation and for community wells, that the fish had no habitat left. I think one of the great moments of fun that Karen had was watching me clamber over rocks, slippery rocks, and fall face down in Chora Creek. I don't know that I've heard her laugh that hard in a long time.
I think the recent observations about loss of eelgrass are of tremendous concern. I mean, the eelgrass resource is hugely important to this bay, and really understanding why that's happening. Is it related to climate change or a new pathogen we don't know about? I think it's really important to learn what's going on with that problem, because losing our brant population, losing the eelgrass, really will change the estuary as a viable system, and protecting it to the extent we can from invasive species. Estuaries all over the country, San Francisco estuary is a tremendous example. It's completely changed in terms of its natural flora and fauna because of invasive species like the Asiatic clam. And trying to keep this little system as intact as possible as we can into the future, I think, is an incredibly important goal.
One of the things I did when I first moved here in 1980 was fit out a small flat bottom boat so that I could learn more about the bay with firsthand knowledge and be on the water a lot. I put that boat in a little inlet down in Cuesta by the sea, and pretty much went out on the bay for a few hours virtually every day for the better part of a year or two, and just got to know the animal life and the plant life a little bit better. The estuaries down south where I used to live were built over by shopping centers and condominiums. This one luckily wasn't, and now doesn't seem to be as vulnerable to that as some of the places we've seen go by the wayside in California.
I started working in this watershed because I was concerned about it. And then I moved to the watershed and began living here as well. And to be working on a system and living there and learning about it, making it my home, it just became so important for me. And there'd be times when I'd be flying home from some trip and fly over the Morros and just think, I don't know why I go anywhere, because where I live is so beautiful.